Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pet. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Matt, what's going on? Back from Houston, and we're back here doing mailbag, Bulls mailbag. You can drop your text messages and your voicemails at 331-979-1369. We're on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. It's glad to have you back. You made it home safely. Did you bring any of the Bulls cash considerations back from you from Houston?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? No, I didn't run into any of the cash considerations while I was hanging out down in Houston. It was nice to get away for a little bit over the All-Star break. Did have some air travel cancellations and delays yesterday, but finally did make my way back home. I got home back to Chicago last night. Appreciate you handling things solo while I was gone tail end of last week, and then on Monday. Really enjoyed your chat with Tony Gill, who's another part of the Bulls podcast family. That was a really great episode. I listened to it on the plane ride home. I got to ask you, Jordan, though, before we get into our mailbag episode today, how are you doing with the whole Manny Machado news that broke yesterday? I thought about you, man. I feel bad for you. I feel bad for Sox fans everywhere. That was just really awful news.
I was going to do a solo show yesterday, and I thought about this, and I was going to say, you know, it's almost a good thing that... It was almost a good thing that you were going to be delayed and not going to do a show if I was going to do one by myself, because I was like, I trolled you for a while about being a Cubs fan and having some ups and downs last year, and I was sitting back like, you know what, the Sox are in a rebuild, they're going to be in a position to spend, it's going to be a good offseason, we're going to have a chance here, we're going to be up against small market teams, it's going to be a good offseason.
Stop laughing at me, I'm serious! I have an announcement to make, and it's very important, and I'm going to say this to America right now. I am a straight punk. I'm going to repeat that. I'm a straight punk, okay? I have no guts. I'm a scaredy cat. I'm a chicken.
Man, what a kick in the nuts that was yesterday. The San Diego Padres really,
yeah,
really.
I mean, outside of being a warm climate, you know, team, and then obviously the money, like, I guess that was the deciding factor. It really stinks. Of course, a lot of Sox fans yesterday were talking about, like, you know, this is not a coincidence. This is a pattern. The two teams in this town that are owned by Jerry Reinsdorf continually fail to get the biggest, you know, most wanted free agents, Machado being the latest example. And you had, you know, Kenny and Rick Hahn talking about how it was just like they weren't willing and weren't able to go to that $300 million level that the Padres went to. And, you know, it just seemed like Sox fans were not interested in hearing the justifications for that.
And I can't blame Manny Machado if $300 million is guaranteed on the table as opposed to $250 million.
Right.
Or $280 million guaranteed on the table. Like, I can't.
And the other money that, like, the Sox offer included was vested as far as, like, he had to hit a certain number of plate appearances the season before, right, for, like, a huge back end increase, like, were to kick in. So, like, whereas the Padres, they were just like, here's $300 million.
Right. In that ninth and tenth year, he had to hit 550 plate appearances in that eighth year. for that $50 million to kick in his 9th and 10th year. And, you know, for a guy with some injury problems, and, you know, you see MLB players in their final years of those careers, like,
right.
Look at Miguel Cabrera, for example. I mean, the dude just gained a bunch of weight and was like, you know what? I got paid, so whatever. I'm going to just hang out in Detroit and live out this contract. Like, so I can understand it from his point, but it just sucks when you see the Padres swoop in, a small market team. They swoop in. They're like, we're going to lay all the cash on the table.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to figure it out later. And this is what happens. It's a kick in the nuts. And Matt, you know what the weirdest thing is the odd similarity of the anger of the fan base in the White Sox community and the really odd similarity of the anger in the Bulls community when things like this happen. And the thing is Bulls fans and Sox fans can be exclusive. Like, there's a lot of Sox fans that could give a shit less about what the Bulls are doing. They're just exclusively Sox fans. And it's crazy to see the comments that are rolling in that are almost identical
yeah.
to the way that Bulls fans were angry when things like this go down for the Bulls over the last few years.
Yeah, it's the same frustration Bulls fans have as far as being a huge market team with, you know, dollars on dollars on dollars and being so cheap that, like, you almost never want to be in, you know, the situation to pay luxury taxes, to pay the biggest stars to come here, or just failing to get meetings with the biggest stars to try to convince them to come here. Very similar frustrations between the Bulls fan base and the Sox fan base, again, owned by the same family. And, you know, I saw you were not in the mood yesterday to have, maybe it was too soon, but to have a laugh at what I tweeted out yesterday saying, like, well, you know, all right, they swung and missed on Machado, so at least now, like, Jerry can get back to focusing on the Bulls, which, of course, I said tongue-in-cheek, and the Sox and Bulls fans were just not having it yesterday. Yeah.
And most people who know that you're a through-and-through diehard Cubs fan, so it's like, okay. You know,
but I did truly feel bad for Sox fans. I do right. feel bad. And as a Cubs fan, I really, knowing, like, the Cubs were never in play for Machado. They were always, you know, looking towards Bryce, which also doesn't look like it's going to happen. But as just like a Chicago sports fan, I really wanted the Sox to get him because it would have made the Cubs-Sox rivalry more interesting. It would have probably accelerated this White Sox rebuild that we have with a young farm system on the South Side. Like, I really wanted the Sox to get him because it just would have made Chicago sports more interesting. It would have made Chicago baseball way more exciting this season. So I was, you know, it's not as devastating as if, you know, the Cubs were, you know, talking to Bryce Harper and had an offer and he chose another offer. You know, but obviously it's still a bummer. I'm bummed. As a Cubs fan, I'm bummed that the Sox couldn't get it done.
But yeah, on top of all of this, just to kind of wrap up the comment, I think the funniest thing of it all, to me, the biggest parallel that I think a lot of the White Sox and Bulls fans can make here is when Kenny Williams came out and was talking, the funniest thing to me was him and Gar Forman sound a lot alike when they talk. Now, in present day, like, talking about missing on these big free agents and talking about not being able to spend money or needing to look to the future as far as their cap flexibility or their flexibility in terms of signing these guys. It's like, dude, I've been a Bulls fan and I've been listening to this for the last 5 years, man. I don't need to hear this with the other franchise in town that I love and support. Come on now. You haven't spent any money on a contract larger than $68 million over the lifetime of this franchise. Don't tell me that. So yeah, I'm disappointed. But I believe in the prospects. I'm very disappointed.
I think it's fair to be disappointed. And yeah, you're right. The buzzword flexibility, I think, is a crossover that gets a lot of Bulls and White Sox fans frustrated when
it's
stuff like
look.
This happens.
It's tough.
It's rough. Hey, maybe Kenny and Gar are actually like somehow the same person. And I don't know how they're pulling off their disguise in both directions, but maybe that's a real thing.
It's like it's like the Wayne's World episode where they do like multiple endings and they're like pulling their mask off.
Right. Well, because, you know, Jerry doesn't want to pay so many executives to run two different teams. He's got an overlap. Gar and Kenny are the same person, but they only get one paycheck.
Kenny's never going anywhere. Kenny helped them win that World Series. He will have that job for a lifetime, like we've talked about many times here with the Bulls organization. John Paxson helped him win those championships. He will have a job for a lifetime. Same thing with Kenny. Matt, quickly before we go to a break and we get into all of the mailbag questions, you can do that at 331-979-1369. Felt like we needed to update some injuries. We haven't done that in a couple weeks. One in particular before the Bulls start up again, last 24 games of the season. Chandler Hutchison, real fast. So, diagnosed with the injury. The injury happened on the 23rd of January against the Atlanta Hawks. Played through it on that Friday against the Clippers. Actually diagnosed, came out with the injury on that 26th of January, on that Saturday. Was in the walking boot, said he'd be reevaluated after the All-Star break. So we're here in the All-Star break, wrapping that up. The four-week marker is this Saturday. We did hear last week from Jim Boylan that they are going to be very cautious with Hutchison, that they were going to reevaluate him at the end of this week. Haven't heard a whole lot from anybody about him, but said that this is a strange injury. Quote, that quote coming straight from Jim Boylan, and that they were going to be very cautious about him. Adding Otto Porter Jr., having Wayne Seldon now on this roster, knowing what those guys can do, I would assume that they're going to be very, 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 very careful with him. And so that to me says, if he's not 100% and everybody is not 100% sure before he goes back out on the floor, that's... this, we may not see him for a little while, if not at all, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree that they should be cautious with Hutchison in a season when there's, you know, there's nothing to play for now. You would still like to see, I don't know about you, but personally, if he is healthy and cleared to play, I would like to see more of Chandler Hutchison before this season is over. They've got, you know, what, like 25 or so games left. We saw some promising signs from him as he started to get more playing time after the holiday trade. And I think the kid has potential to be a part of this team moving forward. And to me, the way that you go about it, I mean, you mentioned now with the arrival of Otto Porter in the trade, the solid play of Wayne Seldon, who can play some of those minutes at the wing as well. You're like, all right, well, how does Hutch get his minutes if he is healthy and cleared to play? And to me, the answer is simple. Let Hutch play the fourth quarter. Sit Otto Porter in the fourth quarter of any game, especially games that are close and that the Bulls might accidentally win. I know that this team is feeling a little bit refreshed with the arrival of Otto and the fact that their numbers, their metrics, or their offensive efficiency, everything has gotten better since Otto's arrival. They've won a couple of games, and that has helped the morale of this team that has been in the gutter for a long time this season. I get that. But you're talking about putting serious risk at your odds in that NBA draft lottery. And I know, even if they finish in the top three, it's only a 14% chance. If they finish with the fourth worst record, it's 12.5%. And if it's five, I think it dips down to like 10.5%. So it's not a huge difference. But if you want to get more looks at Hutchison and see what you have with him, to me, the simple solution is, play him late in games, because I'm sorry to Chandler Hutchison, and this isn't a knock on him. He's a rookie, still learning, still developing, whereas Otto Porter is a plug-and-play guy who was arguably now like the third best player on this team, or maybe if you're talking about two-way players, like the first or second best player on this team. So don't risk wins that you don't want playing Otto Porter in the fourth quarter of close games. Give those minutes to Hutch and just see what you have.
Agreed with you on that. I just don't want him to come back until he's 100% healthy.
I agree with you on that, too. There's no point risking further injury if he's not completely healthy, which, you know, with this team, we get a lot of worrisome feelings because of the misdiagnoses to all of these players in recent years. So I'm with you there. My thing is, if he is healthy and cleared to play, you can, you know, kill two birds with one stone, in essence, get more looks at Hutch, and prevent yourself from winning games you don't want to win.
Agreed, and I think as soon as he comes back, too, there will be more than enough minutes for him to soak up, too. Like, that bench is awful, and Jim Boylan can't even use anybody there outside of Wayne Seldon for more than 10 minutes a night, so...
Right.
I think we'll be all right if he comes back. It's just about, is he 100% healthy, and when will that be? So we'll find out more later this week when we get an actual official update. Denzel Valentine, though... boots off his leg, so that's good news for him, but he'll still be out for the rest of the season. Same thing with Wendell Carter Jr. He's progressed a little bit nicely, but he's still out for the rest of the year. So those are the injury updates. Got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, taking all of your questions, drop those for us on social media, on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck, or on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Stick with us here at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
What's up, Locked On Bulls listeners? This is Matt here with a word from our latest sponsor, King Wipes. King Wipes will change your life. They've changed mine. I'm not kidding. I'm not a guy who uses a lot of products and toiletries. I'm pretty simple. I got a stick of deodorant. I got 2-in-1 shampoo, conditioner. I got body wash. And I got toothpaste. That's it. I'm very simple when it comes to taking care of my body and what people call manscaping these days. But I swear, King Wipes will change your life. Flushable wet wipes add a new level of clean that is just not possible with dry toilet paper. Think about it. If you spill peanut butter on the counter, do you wipe it up with a dry paper towel? Or after digging in your yard, do you come in and wipe your hands with a dry napkin before eating? Every man is the king of his castle, and that includes, that's right, that porcelain throne. Make the most of your throne time with large, luxurious wipes that are flushable, biodegradable, and infused with aloe vera to keep it all soft and clean. Have you ever been stuck at the stadium, on the road, at the office, or in a dingy dive bar with nothing but receipts and dirty dollar bills? Keeping King Wipes in your pocket can really save your butt. They're available in both a 48-count home throne pouch and individually wrapped wipes for those on-the-go moments in life. King Wipes make every flush a royal flush. And our Locked On Bulls listeners right now can visit kingwipes.com and enter Locked On 15 to save 15% on all purchases. That's kingwipes.com, Locked On 15 promo code for 15% off all your purchases. They're also available for purchase on Amazon. Remember, King Wipes are for the Duke in all of us. Your throne awaits. Go take it.
Back here on Locked On Bulls, hit us up, 331-979-1369. Drop us your text, your voicemails. 24 games left in this season. Matt, I was taking a look at the strength of schedule for the bottom five teams. And you know what's kind of crazy? Tankathon puts the strength of schedule out, and the Bulls are wedged in between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Atlanta Hawks, and they stack up the strength of schedule according to what's the best for tanking, according to the teams they have left to play, and what's the worst for tanking. And they go by the average of wins. And it's kind of crazy. The Atlanta Hawks and the Cleveland Cavaliers, those two teams are 11th and 12th among these rankings, and they have the hardest schedules in the remaining 24 games. So we may look at those two teams losing a fair amount of games in the last 24. The Bulls are ranked 16 among this rankings. The New York Knicks are at 18, and the Phoenix Suns are at 26th. So the only team in this ranking that might win a lot of games in the last 24 games throughout this stretch is the Phoenix Suns. So anybody looking for the Bulls to try and catch, like the Knicks or the Suns or the Cleveland Cavaliers, the shot is very, very unlikely with the schedule that remains. So I figured I would just throw that out there before we get into those text messages and voicemails.
The likelihood that the Bulls can catch any of the teams in the bottom three right now, I'd say it's not impossible. They only have a couple more wins than those teams. It's not likely, especially with what we've seen since the arrival of Otto Porter Jr. This Bulls team has more talent, without a doubt, than those other three teams. I think it's safe to say that it's, you know, I'm not too worried right now about them catching up to the Hawks win total, who are decently far ahead. What do they have, like four or five more wins than the Bulls right now?
Yeah, five games ahead on the Atlanta Hawks right now,
right,
from flipping four
so
or five.
I think that's certainly something I'm not worried about right now. The real interesting part is going to happen at the very tail end of the season, when I think it's like in the final 10 days of the season, the Bulls play the Knicks twice. So if the Knicks manage to scrape together a few more wins, and you know they have a new look now with the arrival of DSJ from the Mavs in that Porzingis trade, maybe the Knicks and the Bulls are within a win or two of each other as we hit April, and the Bulls and Knicks square off twice. And you wonder, this is a team that last year, the Bulls won some games down the stretch with Sean Kill draft pick and all that kind of stuff that they probably shouldn't have won and kind of shot their tank in the foot. Are the Bulls going to go out and try and win those games against the Knicks? Is Jim Boylen going to try to win those games against the Knicks, and will it cost the Bulls percentages? That is a very real fear that I have.
Yeah, that can certainly be the case. And I think it's more difficult for the Bulls to leapfrog the Cleveland Cavaliers from 4-3 than it is for the Atlanta Hawks to leapfrog the Bulls from 5-4. There's more of a gap between the Bulls and the Hawks than there is the Cavs and the Bulls. Like the Bulls are too good to lose that many games, and the Cleveland Cavs are too bad to fall from 3-4, as opposed to where the Bulls are 4-5 and the Hawks to catch them. Like the Hawks would have to be so bad in the last 24 games, and the Bulls would have to be so good to flip-flop those positions. So
right.
That's where I'm at. I'm not freaking out yet. So, all right, let's get into some of these questions. I got some from Twitter because we've got a lot from Twitter. So thanks for hitting us up. Thanks for dropping your questions. Let's start here, Matt. We've gotten this question a lot, so I'm not just going to try to combine this all into one. This one comes from RJ on Twitter, @_PenGriffeyJr. He said, what would be the ideal bench pieces for the Bulls next season that you guys would want via free agency or in-house? I think it's safe to say we need two-way players. Prefer maybe three vets, a guard forward, and a big. So, Matt, this is a little bit vague, but the Bulls have a few options to go with as far as their roster construction goes. And for the most part, most of their guys are going to be back. You have to include the two draft picks. But overall, the Bulls are going to have to address a couple different needs. Point guard, they're going to have to address a backup big. What do you think their options are going to be? And what are they going to address it? Are they going to address the point guard in the draft? Are they going to address the backup big in free agency or vice versa? What do you want them to go after? And what are their goals now that they've got Otto Porter locked up at the trade deadline?
Right. I mean, if you feel confident in LaVine, Markkanen, Wendell, and Otto being four of your starting five moving forward, clearly point guard is what you need to address. I believe that the Bulls will address it in free agency, looking for some, you know, second or maybe third tier veteran point guards. We've talked about Ricky Rubio being a very likely candidate. We know the Bulls are at least somewhat interested in him. We know that he and Zach LaVine have a solid playing chemistry from their days in Minnesota together. Terry Rozier is another name that I think interests a lot of people, including myself. We had one of our texters, the 919, asking us about Terry Rozier and the Bulls offering him kind of a prove it deal similar to the Jabari Parker one. As far as we know where they target and will it be the draft, clearly that depends on where they're drafting. I think if we know that Gar and Paxson and, you know, everyone on their scouting team has gone to look at Ja Morant, the very interesting point guard prospect playing for Murray State right now. We know that the Bulls have always been interested in Murray State products, and that is certainly another piece to that narrative. Are they in position to draft Ja Morant, and is Zion off the board? Then maybe that's what they do, but they could do that and add a veteran point guard in free agency if they decide that, you know, Chris Dunn really ain't it. Even though they could bring him back again next season. As far as the other points of depth that they need to address, yeah, assuming they don't re-sign Rolo and that Felicio is still unusable, having another big to have in the depth of that backcourt, it's not like Wendell and Lowry can just take turns playing the five, or even like we've seen them play the very small ball lineup of Otto at the five since his arrival, but you need to add another big. So, you know, I don't know where they will look and where the priority lies, other than, I think, point guard first and foremost, and then trying to fill out the gaps in the roster after that.
Open up for debate, right? Because you don't know what the Bulls are going to do in the draft, and I think that's going to dictate a lot of what they're going to do in free agency. And even if they do take somebody like Ja Morant in the draft, I don't think that necessarily means they're going to go away from it in free agency. They still need to figure out and bring in a veteran point guard to bolster their rotation of point guards. So I'm just looking at it right now, like guys that are going to be available and out there as far as veteran point guards that might be cost available. Isaiah Thomas is one. Rajon Rondo is another. You had mentioned Ricky Rubio. He might be now out of the Bulls' price range. I don't know really what he's going to want and where he's going to want to go. Terry Rozier, yeah, but he's a restricted free agent. I don't know if Boston's going to want to bring him back and all the decisions they're going to have to make. A name that the Bulls have scouted is Darren Collison. Dude, I don't want to have anything to do with him. I don't know if you remember or not, but he had pleaded guilty to domestic violence and served 8 games in 2016 or 2017. I want nothing to do with that on the Chicago Bulls, so I'm out on him. I know Rose's name has been floated out there too, so I wouldn't be surprised if the Bulls check in on him. Eric Bledsoe is out there too, but I think his price point is going to be way out of the Bulls' price range, and that's going to be most of the cap. There are names out there. We'll just see what the Bulls want to spend on that position. Like you had said, though, dried up as far as the bigs go and the backup bigs. We had named a bunch of names on last week's episode too. So the Bulls have 2 picks, though, to deal with. They have 2 picks to deal with to kind of fill some of those gaps as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see them take a flyer on a big with that second round pick that they have from Memphis. All right, this next text message comes to us from Michael from the 773. Hey guys, quick question. In the event that we get the number one pick, who's the odd man out of the starting five? If moving LaVine to the one isn't an option, which I think you and I both expressed as our opinion on an episode last week, Jordan, if LaVine at the one isn't an option, then is it Porter Jr. or Carter Jr. out? If Porter is out, Zion plays the 3. If Wendell is out, Lowry plays the 5, Zion plays the 4. And, of course, Otto plays the 3. What are your guys' thoughts? This is an interesting one that I've kind of started to think about more recently, Jordan. And I know it's like, don't count your chickens before they hatch kind of thing with Zion. But if the Bulls do get lucky, get number one, and draft best available as opposed to need and take Zion over Ja Morant, which I think they should do in that situation, how do you see the starting five shaking out?
We did talk about this, I think, a couple weeks ago. I'm just trying to think of it not from a fan's perspective of what the Bulls would do. Bringing Zion in right away, if he looks unbelievable in training camp, I think they would make it a battle right away. It sounds crazy, but I feel like Zion would come off the bench to start, right? Like, is that crazy for me to say?
I mean, no, I don't think it's crazy. Because
can you really move Zach LaVine from the 2 to the point guard position? And do you really want to move and shift Otto from the 3 to the 2?
No, absolutely not.
Or you move Wendell Carter Jr. from playing the starting role at center to the bench and move Lowry. Like, you're moving everybody around from different positions just to start Zion.
I think it would not be in the best interest of the team, the chemistry, and the individual players to move Wendell to the bench and start Lowry at the 5. I know that we want to feel optimistic about having some looks moving forward as Markkanen progresses and develops his game and becomes a better rim protector and all of these things, that you will have opportunities to play Markkanen at the 5 and kind of stagger Lowry and Wendell at times. I don't know if it's in their best interest to start with that as your starting lineup next season in this hypothetical, so that you can put plug and play Zion in the starting lineup. I know everyone's very excited about Zion Williamson. I know that Bulls fans think that he is, you know, a potential franchise saving kind of talent, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that. Clearly, there's a lot of excitement around this kid for just reasons. He looks like he is going to be a hell of a player, even at the NBA level. But I mean. If you're actually trying to compete next year, if you're the Bulls, which I think they will want to do, Otto Porter is a better, more competent player that we know of right now at the NBA level than Zion Williamson can be. I think as much as Bulls fans would love Zion, bringing him in off the bench, at least for starters, to try and continue to develop that chemistry between Lowry and Wendell in the front court, because we didn't really see much of that at all this season between Markkanen starting the year injured and then Wendell getting injured midway through the year. I think that has to be a pretty important focus next season. And you bring Zion off the bench and see what he can do, and maybe he earns his way into the starting lineup at some point during the season.
And if that's not the case, and if they want to play Zion right away, then you've got to move somebody. Then you've got to look to trade one of these guys out of your starting five.
Exactly. And maybe in that scenario, what they try and do is acquire themselves a elite level or close to elite level point guard in moving away, you know, one of those front court pieces, and maybe that is Wendell. Although, again, I still don't love the idea of just making Markkanen be your five.
Right. I don't know if that's necessarily a good idea either. And maybe, you know, as much as they said that they loved the way Otto plays, you know, there was a lot of other teams that wanted him and were, you know, I looked around the fan, like the other fan bases that were looking to acquire him that were playoff contenders. Denver being one of the fan bases that was infuriated. They wanted him so badly as a piece or a chip to add to their contending playoff team. So I don't think Otto Porter is necessarily a guy that can't be moved. So not saying that that's not a possibility. And we're already talking about a bunch of ifs here. If Zion is here, I think this is just
right.
All really good problems to have. And so it goes back to the same case again. I'm glad I don't have to deal with this problem, and it's all really good problems to have. So those are the two cases. Either bring Zion off the bench to start the season and make him earn that and make him learn through that, or you move one of the pieces that you already have in that starting five and you plug and play Zion where you think he fits best. So those are your two options.
And just real quick to kind of wrap up this conversation of what happens if they do get Zion, this is another text that's kind of related from the 217. With the one-and-done rule gone in 21 and a league dominated by point guard play that the Bulls don't have right now, what's your thoughts on this hypothetical? Say the Bulls do get the number one pick. What about drafting Zion and then trading him for Ja Morant and a 2021 unprotected first? So that essentially would solve the Bulls' point guard problem if Ja Morant is the guy they decide they really want at the point guard position, and that Zion is a very great talent but not something that fits. I know how I feel about this, Jordan, and I don't love this idea. What about you?
No, I'm not considering myself a draft expert at all, and talking to people that are, and they say Zion is clear cut the best prospect in this draft and everybody else is in a tier on their own. So I want Zion, and if that's who the Bulls get at number one, you don't trade out of that. You don't just give that up just to get future assets. That doesn't make any sense. And so I'm out on that.
I think if the Bulls say get number two and lose out on Zion, because he obviously will go number one, Ja Morant is a nice consolation prize and a convenient one that fits a position of need. But if I get number one, I'm not taking Zion just to flip him and get Ja Morant to plug and play at the point guard spot, because we know that there is a big difference in potential ceiling. At least that is the case right now.
I agree with you. All right, let's go back to Twitter here real fast. With Boylan letting these guys play with more of an open-minded offense in the last 5 to 7 games and letting these guys play with more of Fred's offense, would you guys be more accepting of the idea of bringing him back? Certainly his coaching philosophy has evolved from walking it up and posting up with Robin to spacing the floor and playing with pace. Do you guys still want him gone? Matt, I'll let you answer this one first.
Oh, boy. I am starting to worry a little bit more than I was maybe, say, a month ago about the Bulls actually bringing Boylan back next season, because we have seen between letting them get out and run a little bit more, and then on top of that, the arrival of Otto creating all sorts of space for LaVine and Markkanen to operate, we have seen the Bulls become a more efficient offensive team under Boylan after the whole slowdown experiment. So that's why I am worried that Pax is going to look at that and say, we saw some improvements from this offensive unit from Boylan after a pretty rough transition. So there's your answer, at least from my perspective. I'm worried that it is becoming more of a likely possibility that they do keep Boylan on as head coach next season. I don't want that. I think that there is still a disconnect between the stylistic ways that Jim Boylan handles being the coach of this team, handles NBA players, and still way too many, you know, vague platitudes about heart and spirit and bulls across your chest.
We got bulls across our chest.
Than what I want from my head coach in today's NBA. I think it is in their best interest to move on. And I mean, if Pax is really just, you were talking about this recently, Jordan, about how you see these very, worrisome or glaring similarities between Boylan and Pax and how they talk, how they operate, how they communicate, what Paxton likes about Boylan. That it's, you know, I think he got a point there, and that's why it's starting to be a little bit more of a worry to me. If it's that, okay, like, I don't agree with it, but I see it. If it's, well, we're going to keep boiling because we don't want to pay three coaches, that is something that I would be way more upset about. Because, come on, you're the Bulls. You have the money to do that if you want.
Agreed. And that's why I was like, even a week and a half, 2 weeks ago when I asked you that, I was like, man, I hate to say it, but the way both of these guys talk and their philosophy is, they just line up. They line up way too similarly. And to me, that's just, it's a scary idea. And look, to Jim Boylan's credit, and I know a lot of people don't want to give him credit, but he deserves it. Like, and I think we should give credit when credit's due. Jim Boylan has made adjustments, and he deserves that. He's finally letting these guys play the way that they should have been playing all along. Open things up. Let these guys run. Let them be athletic. Let them do that. Now you're seeing improvements. Welcome to the modern NBA, Jim Boylan. Welcome. Thank you for doing that. And we're going to give you a little bit of praise here. You deserve that. But again, small sample size. And we're on a week break from NBA basketball, so I think we're letting our minds wander a little bit. So with that, I say Jim Boylan deserves some credit for actually adapting a little bit and growing as a head coach. But agree with you, Matt, too. I think everything that's gone on in the first 5 or 6 weeks and still the philosophies, I don't think necessarily match up with the connection that an NBA coach can have long term here. So I'm worried too, but at the same time, if it was me picking a head coach, I would say, Jim, thanks for your time here. You know, it didn't work out. We need to go in a new direction. Thanks for your time. We're going to pay you the money that you deserve. Here it is. Good luck in your next coaching adventure. See you later in April. But that may not be the case, and especially if they play well in the last 24 games. So I'm still not on board with it fully, but I'll give him credit at least for making changes, growing, and getting this team to at least play better than they were a month ago. This one's from the 815. Matt, this is a conversation Tony and I were talking about post-All-Star break. This is an off-branded question, not about the Bulls, but I want to get your thought on it. So this is from the 815. Not really a question, but more of a thought. As we all know, with technology, though, someone will hack the jerseys and put things owners probably don't want on there. This is going off the question and the thought we had about the jerseys that Adam Silver
debuted during All-Star weekend. Yeah, the tech summit.
He said, inappropriate letters or heck, maybe even moving photos. It's going to take a lot of thought with the new jerseys, but I love the idea of changing the name. Maybe you want to keep switching whoever is balling out the best on your team when you go to the game that night. So overall, I really like the idea. That one from the 815. What did you think about this at the All-Star weekend when he unveiled this? Do you like this idea? You think it's too futuristic? Is it cramping your style as far as nostalgia goes? How did you feel about this?
I think it's completely unnecessary. I mean, as sorry to be, you know, a Debbie Downer on this new tech savvy thing that the league is thinking about introducing. It's not needed for the players themselves because they all have their name and their number. And why would you need to change that in the middle of a game or between games? You know, unless you're talking about guys who are like, well, this guy's on a two way, or this is a G League player we just brought up, or this is a guy in a but really. You could still get jerseys made in quick form and quick in quick turnaround time. And then as far as being a new piece of collectible merchandise for fans to buy, oh, you can get a Bulls jersey that you can change the number and change the name on it. Why fans buy jerseys of players that they like? Maybe they're retro jerseys, you know. It's still like the most popular jersey among Bears fans is a Walter Payton jersey. And, you know, there's probably still more Urlacher jerseys hanging around than there are of anybody that's currently on, you know, that defensive front seven. Same thing with the Bulls. You go to a Bulls game, you know, what do you see? More Michael Jordan jerseys or more Zach LaVine jerseys? So, and personally speaking, I have a lot of Bulls jerseys in my collection, and they are all of players whom I love, past and present. Mostly past at this point, but past and present. So for a fan, I think part of the fun is collecting and building your collection of jerseys. So having a jersey that you could just change the name and the number on the back, like why? Why would a fan want that? It's antithetical to and contradictory to fans who are diehard sports fans of a team and like to collect jerseys of their favorite players of that team. And then from the league's perspective, when you're talking about sales and merch, like why would they want this? Why, like, other than, hey, this is a cool new tech-savvy way for a fan to have a jersey and look at the cool thing you can do. If you can have a Bulls jersey that can have the name and number of any player you want on it, then why would you be buying multiple jerseys? It doesn't make sense to me in either direction.
Yeah, I think Tony Gill brought this great idea up. Is it would be part of an app, and then you would go on the app and you would buy specific players, and you would have to buy the code for it. And so the code would give you the downloadable content to be able to switch between different players. And so that's how they would make their money. So they would still be getting the revenue for every jersey that you bought. It would just give you the instant access to switch between all these different players. So the teams are still making their money. You just have the instant access to wear one jersey and switch between different players.
As opposed to like in the old days when you had to like go buy a video game cartridge at the video game store to play different video games. Now it's just like, oh, I just like download this game onto my, you know, onto my smart video game system. And can, you know, have a million of them in my, you know, in my inventory at once. But it's so it's that concept, but with jerseys.
Right. Now you can store everything on your Xbox.
You still got to pay for it.
Or you can store everything on your PS4, wherever you play your video games. Yep.
Okay. So that makes more sense to me from the owner's perspective of still making the same amount of dollars. But it still, to me, is a disconnect on why fans would want that.
That's true.
Why? You're not saving money. You're still spending the money, and you only have one jersey instead of a collection of jerseys. If you're going to spend the money, if I'm going to spend the money, which I know is a very hot point of contention for Bulls fans right now, some Bulls fans screaming, stop spending money on Bulls merch. This is why people are still employed. I get that. But as a fan who loves collecting jerseys, I don't want the one and then have to pay money to have a different name and number on the back. If I still have to pay for it, then I want to add to my jersey collection with different physical jerseys.
Right. And I think that's where you and I still get that feeling, because we're part of a generation still, and maybe more so I'm on the borderline of that, where I was a part of that, where collecting jerseys was a part of that. And, you know, the generation behind mine now is a part of this new and growing technology where you can do that. And maybe they'll be enticed by that, and they're not a part of that, where collecting jerseys is a part of being engulfed in sports. Like, Matt, I have a whole crate full of jerseys that from when I was a kid all the way through now, I still keep every jersey that I've ever had. And part of that is, like, I was handed down jerseys from my dad that he gave me. I have a Deion Sanders jersey from the Cowboys. Like,
yeah.
I've never worn in my life, but I still keep that.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. The nostalgia factor of it and just the collectible aspect of it, to me, is part of the reason why buying jerseys is awesome.
Exactly. Like, I'm sitting here in my room right now staring up at my, like, Chicago sports shrine wall that I have, that's the wall that connects to my desk. And on that wall, I have a Jordan 45 flanked by two Rodmans, one black and one white. And they are on my wall because I had them in my youth and they no longer fit me, because I am now an adult-sized human being. But I kept them because of the nostalgia factor, because I love collections. I mean, that's why, as sports fans, we collect things. You know, it's not like hoarders. It's just sports fans love to collect sports memorabilia. That's why people have man caves and entire rooms of their house dedicated to their sports fandom of their favorite team or cards. Like, I just went back and looked through my old basketball card collection recently so I could get Kendall. What the hell's the point?
It's a great idea. I think this is a very innovative, really cool idea. And I don't think the NBA would go away from actually selling physical jerseys, but this would be just an addition for a lot of the younger fans. And I think this is a cool, very, very cool idea. But it does kind of take away, like you're saying, the excitement factor of being able to add to a collection. And look, think about the vintage factor of all of the jerseys, too. Is like, vintage jerseys that are authentic still go for a ton of money. Think about all of the antique shops and the vintage shops that are out there from like the 80s and 90s that are still thriving right now in the eBay market and the third-party sellers that are selling jerseys from the 70s, 80s, and 90s that are going for triple the price right now because people still want those. So I still think there will always be a market for physical jerseys that are printed. It's just another way for the NBA to make money and to market to their younger audience. So I'm on board for this. And look, these aren't coming out. Adam Silver, I think said this might debut around like 2030. So they still got a lot of work to do with this. But I thought it was a great idea. And our texter brings up a great point is, you know, with technology now, of course, somebody is going to, all it's going to take is one person to hack the code and just start hacking people's jerseys and writing all of this stuff on it and ruin everything. So, of course, our world's got to ruin something cool and innovative by doing something stupid like that.
Right.
So.
And as far as Bulls fans, how long would it take before somebody hacked it and put cash considerations on the back of somebody's jersey, right? Like, that's just,
yeah,
they're
seriously
just waiting to get trolled on something like that. All right. So this one comes to us, another international texter. And again, shout out to all of those Locked On Bulls fans out there listening. Not just across the country, but all over the world. This is Renee, a Chicagoan living in Prague, saying, the idea of bringing in a point guard in order to push and or mentor or teach Chris Dunn is a joke. Why? He's not a rookie prospect anymore or even a second-year player. What you see is what he is. No upside. How about you? Let's get a free agent or a draft pick, a point guard to replace the crappy one we have. Point guard of the future, my butt. Or, you know, a different version of that. Again, Renee from Prague. Thanks for checking in, Renee. Jordan, I think I agree with Renee in the whole, I don't see the point in bringing in a veteran point guard to quote-unquote mentor or teach or push or motivate Chris Dunn to be a better point guard. I think Chris Dunn is kind of who we've seen him be this season. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think Chris Dunn who is who he is, and look, I don't think this version of Chris Dunn that we've seen this season is who he is going to be his entire NBA career. I don't think he's going to be this bad, but I also don't think that the ceiling on Chris Dunn of what we thought he is nearly as high. I think it's been lowered a bunch, but also the floor has been dropped significantly. So, but the overall, I think it's still completely unknown. Like the timetable on that has shrunk too. So with all of that, the question mark is like, to me, has just been circled a million times. And for me, it's just hard. That's why this summer, the conversation between John Paxson, Gar Foreman, and the management and the coaching staff with Chris Dunn is going to be a very difficult one. It's going to be like, okay, Chris, we need to move on because this isn't working. We have to pay you a contract. We know you're coming up at a contract in a year. So either we need to find a situation that's going to fit you best here in a role that's going to fit you best, or we need to look for other options outside of being a part of this team going forward. And I think that's going to be a hard conversation to have with Chris Dunn. And I don't know if he's necessarily going to like that. But I never bought into the idea of the blank of the future with any of these guys. And we talked about how sick and tired we were to hear that. And I don't think that was necessarily fair to put on any of these players for the last handful of years. So, but I certainly think that it is kind of indicting that we've seen it now multiple times where Chris and Levine have not played particularly well together on the floor. And it just doesn't look good for KD. So
yeah, and I think the other factor there is that, you know, again, kind of weird chopped up sample sizes this season, just like last season, because of a couple of injuries to Dunn, and that is unfortunate. But we've seen, I feel like we've seen enough in that his ceiling is not what we hoped it was, and that he is not this team's point guard of the future. And why spend money on that guy to, you know, actually give him a extension on his rookie deal and pay him like a starting point guard if he is not one? And it's the same thing that they just went through with Bobby Portis and why they decided ultimately to trade him. And then you just think about down the road a little bit further what the Bulls have to be doing to keep this core together that they have tried to build. You're talking about a 2021 restricted free agent summer for Lauri Markkanen. And maybe the Bulls thought they could, lowball's not the right word, but negotiate with Bobby to get him to stay on a deal that was team friendly. They cannot take that risk with Markkanen. Whatever Markkanen wants as his rookie extension, you give it to him. That's my personal opinion. They cannot afford to negotiate and try to lowball Markkanen. They have to pay him in the summer of 2021. It helps that after the 19-20 and 2021 seasons, that same summer, Otto Porter's money will be coming off the books, so the Bulls will have plenty of money to play with. But they will have less so if they decide to keep Chris Dunn on a new contract that he absolutely 100% right now has not earned. So to me, that makes it pretty simple. Hasn't earned that money. You got other people you got to pay in the not-too-distant future. So why give Chris Dunn that money?
Yeah, and just going simply by the stats doesn't tell you everything that's happened with Chris Dunn this season. Because if you look just at his stats are similar to what they were last year. Some categories are up, but overall it hasn't been great as far as what you see with the eye test and watching the actual games. The injuries, not helpful either. The age factor of it, the contract overall, and all the factors too on Chris Dunn's side, they play a part in all of this too. So, Matt, I don't know, and this follows up on this Chris Dunn question because we've got one from TJ815 from Ohio. He's asking us, what's the value of Chris Dunn if they were looking to trade him this summer? What's the value of him? What can you get for him on the trade market? We talked about this at the trade deadline, but weighing your options here. Do you keep him around next year if you do decide to draft somebody? If you do decide to go out and sign somebody on top of that, what does that do to Chris Dunn? What does that make him feel like? And how do you manage all of that? What kind of dynamic do you see coming into next season if you do that? If you add two point guards, you basically have said without explicitly telling Chris Dunn, you know what, we're moving on here. We're bringing in two other point guards, and this is the way we're running with things. Do you feel like you need to trade him, and what can you get on the trade market for him? Or do you just let things play out the way that they're going to and let competition speak for itself?
Well, yeah, so this kind of goes back to our earlier conversation about the point guard position and how the Bulls are going to address it this offseason, and whether it will be through the draft or whether it will be in free agency or perhaps both. If Ja Morant falls to them in the draft, Zion's off the board, and they want to add a veteran free agent on, you know, like a mid-level deal. I think it's very possible that both of those things happen. And if not Ja Morant, then certainly addressing the point guard position with a veteran in free agency. As for what that does in a hypothetical like this one, where the Bulls take Ja Morant and add a veteran point guard, you're right. That essentially tells Chris Dunn, we have no use for you, because whether it's you start with your veteran as your starter, mentor Ja Morant, and then maybe at some point Ja Morant takes the starting role, or maybe he does in his second season, especially if the Bulls sign a veteran point guard to like a 1-year deal with a second year option, you know, which is, you know, another suggestion we had from a texter earlier. I think that makes plenty of sense. As for what Chris Dunn would net the Bulls in a trade should they find themselves in this situation where they add a rookie point guard in the draft and add a veteran in free agency, I think it's really unfortunate to say this given that he was part of the Jimmy Butler package, but I don't know that Chris Dunn can even net you a late first rounder. I really don't see
it. It's hard to gauge what the market is for him because they haven't asked, and from what we heard before the trade deadline, it was like, they're going to ask a lot. They're going to ask a lot because they value right. him. They still value him, even though, regardless of what the fan base thinks of him, they still think he is worth right. a lot. And he's under contract till next year, and he's still a young player, and he was still taken number 5 overall. And regardless of if you think that is worth shit, they don't think that way. So we've got to keep it in that perspective.
Right.
So
It's the story of the Bulls often overvalue the pieces that they have compared to their real value. But the other factor is that what do other teams in the league see as the must-have qualities of a point guard in the NBA today? And if you're talking about starting point guards who your organization would be willing to sacrifice significant value for in a trade to get that player, ideally a scoring threat from all over the floor, which Chris Dunn is not. Chris Dunn is not a capable three-point shooter. Chris Dunn is not very efficient getting to the free throw line and finishing at the rim. Those are the things you want your point guard to be. If he's not those things, you at least want him to have great court vision and a very efficient assist-to-turnover ratio. Chris Dunn, you know, injuries or not, based on what we've seen, ain't that either. So all the boxes you want a competent, versatile point guard to check in today's NBA, Chris Dunn is not those things based on what we've seen. Maybe that's a fair evaluation, and maybe it's selling him a little bit short. I don't know. I think it's somewhere in between. But what we've seen, I can't imagine other teams out there clamoring to get Chris Dunn and sacrificing real capital for him.
Like, you're going to have to pay him. So what other team is going to want to take the risk on 1 year of having to pay him? So I think this 24 games coming back and Chris Dunn having to be healthy, these 24 games are so crucial, not only for Chris Dunn, but so crucial for the Chicago Bulls to figure out what he is and what they can do going forward with him. And that doesn't negate any fact of they're going to have to address the situation regardless of how well he plays. Even if he lights the world on fire in 24 games and plays well going back into the starting unit. So it's... this only adds to the fact, Matt, that this is going to be such an important and such an interesting offseason for this Bulls team. You add the LaVine factor of what the conversation's going to be with the front office there. You add the fact that they're going to have this conversation with Chris Dunn and say, you know what, if we don't land Zion and we do take Ja Morant and we address the point guard in free agency, hey, man, we're going to have a conversation about that. What do you do with the rest of the money you're doing? Like, just all of this is going to just formulate for a very, very interesting offseason. So I don't know what he nets in free agent, or I don't know what he nets on the trade market. And I don't know what the Bulls would just be willing to say, you know what, we're going to try to just cut our losses where they are. He didn't turn out to be what we thought he was going to be. And it goes back to our conversation again. They really liked him for a long time, and we're going to draft him back way back in the draft before this, and they evaluated him then.
Right.
So are they willing to just completely give up on that now? So
it's usually it usually takes a while for this Bulls regime to admit a previous misstep and correct it. And they did not want to give up on campaign, and they picked up his option this season based on very little evidence to say that they should do so, because they weren't ready to give up on a guy that they, again, as you said, same thing about Chris Dunn, they really wanted campaign in that 2015 draft. They always want their initial scouting information and their initial scouting opinions to be the right ones. And we have seen that this team does have a very solid track record of hitting in the draft. That is the one thing that they continue to hang their hat on, and the one area where I will continue to go to bat for them when fans just keep yelling hashtag FireGar Packs into the cold, dark Chicago night and refuse to listen to anything positive being said about how to evaluate their job performances. They draft well. Cannot deny that. But sometimes when they miss, they are so proud of how well that they draft that they are reluctant to finally admit that they missed. It happened with campaign. It's happening with Chris Dunn, who technically, you know, they didn't draft, but so deeply wanted in the draft, same with campaign, that they went back and got him after the fact. That, to me, is still a miss in drafting and scouting talent at the collegiate level. So that problem is a real one for this Bulls organization.
Point guards are tough to come by, and maybe they have the conversation with Chris Dunn too, and he takes it better than maybe we're all thinking, but it's hard to understand that right now, and Chris Dunn is a battler, so. But I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We didn't get to any voicemails on this episode, but we'll do that tomorrow, so if you want to drop those voicemails, this would be a good time to do that. We've got a few to play, but we've got plenty of space. If you want to drop those voicemails, do that at 331-979-1369. What are your thoughts going into the last stretch of the season? This is going to be an important one for the Bulls. They've got a lot of unknowns, a lot of questions, and not that much time to decide here on the starting unit, the bench, some of the pieces that may or may not be here by the end of the season, going into the offseason. A lot of evaluation, not a whole lot of time to do that. So drop your questions. Where are you at? What are you feeling? What's on your mind? Do that at 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. I'm the Alpha Butt Net Channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.